Hi, this is Donovan, and you're tuned to WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
Good morning. You're tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio, WBAI New York at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. Coming up next, Waking Up with Juliana N. King. But first, this news report. I'm Linda Perry. U.S. District Judge Richard Berman offered accused sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein's accusers their day in court on Tuesday. Berman is the judge who presided over the case after federal prosecutors had Epstein arrested last month. In court, women repeatedly described themselves as survivors, and they said they hoped coming forward publicly would encourage other women to heal. They lashed out at Epstein for his alleged crimes and his suicide in his cell August 10th. "He's a coward," said Courtney Wilde, who said she was sexually abused by Epstein in Florida at age 14. She said, "Justice has never been served in this case." Virginia Roberts Jeffrey, who said she was a 15-year-old working at Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago club when she was recruited to perform sex acts on Epstein. She said, "My hopes were quickly dashed and my dreams were stolen." Sarah Ransom, who said Epstein pressured her into unwanted sex when she was in her early 20s, encouraged prosecutors in their efforts to bring others to justice. She said, "Finish what you started. We are survivors, and the pursuit of justice should not abate." In opening the session, the judge called the 66-year-old Epstein suicide a rather stunning turn of events. He defended his decision to let the women speak. He said, "Public hearings promote transparency and provide the court with insights and information that the court might otherwise not be aware of." Attorney Gloria Allred is known for her representation of women alleging sexual assault and harassment.
"I was watching this judge. He listened carefully, looked at the victims who were testifying and or their attorneys who were testifying on behalf of their clients. He listened. He was paying attention. He was showing respect. He was sometimes making notes. And I just thank him for that."
In addition to the women who spoke, statements from over a dozen others were read in court by their lawyers. During the 2.5-hour proceeding, the women sometimes clutched one another to lend support. Most remained composed, but several cried as they described falling into Epstein's web. "He robbed me of my dreams, of my chance to pursue a career I adored," said Jennifer Arose, who accused Epstein of raping her in his New York mansion when she was only 15 years old, an inspiring actress. "The fact I will never have a chance to face my predator in court eats away at me," she said. "They let this man kill himself and kill the chance for justice for so many others." The question before the judge was whether to throw out the indictment because of the defendant's death, a usually pro forma step undertaken without a hearing, but the judge offered Epstein's accusers their day in court. One woman who remained anonymous said Epstein, when she was 15, flew her to a ranch where she was sexually molested for hours while he kept insisting he was helping her to grow. She said he abused her in a position where she would see his framed pictures of himself on a dresser smiling with celebrities. Teela Davis, taking deep breaths to steady her voice, said she was 17 when she was victimized. She said she thought Epstein was the most powerful person in the world. "But the end is here," she said, "and here I stand, feeling more powerful than he will ever be." A New York City coroner ruled that Epstein hanged himself, but one of Epstein's lawyers, Martin Weinberg, challenged that finding during the hearing. He said an expert hired by the defense determined that broken bones in his neck were more consistent with pressure, with homicide, than suicide. "Find out what happened to our client," the lawyer told the judge. "We're quite angry." When a prosecutor said the manner of Epstein's death was completely irrelevant to the purpose of today's proceeding, the judge responded, "Well, I don't know. I think it's fair game for defense counsel to raise its concerns." But the judge took no immediate action on the request, and prosecutors noted that a grand jury is always investigating the death. Noted U.S. litigator David Boies, who represents some of Epstein's victims, says it was a very emotional day.
"It was, I think, amazing. So many wonderful, brave, beautiful people came forward the way they did. was also a great sense of community. If you saw what was going on there, there was a real sense of community among the victims and survivors.
And Boies says it's important not to let conversations by Mr. Epstein's attorneys about how Epstein died distract attention from the evil he did while he was alive. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
Welcome to Waking Up. I'm Juliana Forlano. You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM. In the studio with me,
King Downing. Good morning.
Hey, today we have Alexander Kaufman. We're going to be talking about what's happening in Puerto Rico and not just the storm that's coming right at it. And also Florida's in the crosshairs of that storm as well. So get back up here if you're already down there. Also on the show, Dr. Kelman is coming on the program to talk to us about Lyme disease. We're following up. I've had a lot of calls and a lot of emails about people wanting to follow up about that issue. All that and more, as per usual, on this 68-degree day here on Waking Up, so stay tuned. Good morning, New York. Good morning, New Jersey. Good morning, Long Island. Good morning, Connecticut. Good morning, our one guy in New Orleans. Good morning, Pennsylvania. Good morning, Washington State. We have people listening from all over the place. As it turns out, New York and New York Central issues, you just can't get enough. We have a lot of expats of New York all over the place. Once a New Yorker, always a New Yorker. Well, here in our city, it's 68 degrees going up to 79 and cloudy today. It looks like there might be about, well, what they're saying, 50 and 40% chance of rain this afternoon and evening. So, you know, get your shopping done this morning is what they're saying. Anyway, there is a tropical storm / Hurricane Dorian heading straight for Puerto Rico. And we are having Alexander Kaufman, who is in Puerto Rico right now, our climate reporter and a climate reporter for the Huffington Post. Or I guess it's just Huff Post now. They took the ink tin off. He's going to be here on the program to discuss, not, you know, he was there before the storm went. He was already covering that story. And now he just happens to be there for the next storm. It looks like, you know, the winds are going to be up to 60 miles an hour soon. And, you know, it's going to track right over Puerto Rico and then turn left into Florida.
Mm. Oh, that's not going to be good.
No. Well, hopefully it'll stay at 60 miles an hour. And not 160. I mean, these storms can really pick up. So we'll keep our eye on that story. Here in our city, someone you know, if you've been listening for a long time. Did you hear about this, King? I don't know if you heard about this because I got this from Mitchell Cohen. He's a coordinator of the No Spray Coalition. And remember, he wrote the book, the Monsanto book, that we spent a whole week covering with all the different people that that contributed. So his group, or the group that he's a coordinator of, the No Spray Coalition, is denouncing the New York City Department of Health that has issued a waiver from the provisions of City Law 37, thank you to Mayor de Blasio, and the spraying of toxic pesticides in residential areas and public parks and the streets. So Mitchell is encouraging everyone to call the Department of Health at 347-396-4177 and tell them, you know, basically to stop poisoning our children, because this is what's happening. The Department of Health and Mental Hygiene put out a press release on Monday, right, that they're going to be spraying these different areas of the city without telling anyone in those areas. You know, a press release, if the press doesn't report on it, doesn't do anything. You can't say, oh, I warn people because I put out a press release. Mitchell said that he is in one of the spray zones and he just checked the streets and poles around a park near his home, and where, you know, in these parks where kids play, there was not a warning sign that on Thursday, meaning tomorrow night, they're going to be spraying there. There's no information also about why the spraying is taking place. No numbers of infected mosquitoes, no pools, no nothing cited for why they're picking those spots and what they're doing. This is the Department of Mental. First of all, I'm going to give you, at the end of this segment here, I'm going to give you the Well, maybe I should give it to you up front so that you can start panicking now. I'll give you the areas where they are, you know, supposedly doing this. I'll see if I can get that up while I am giving you this. But they basically said that trucks are going to spray pesticides in parts of Brooklyn and Queens Thursday to reduce mosquito activity and the risk of West Nile virus, which I haven't heard anything about in months or even years. The health department is going to do its fifth. It's called adulticide treatment of the city. I think that's
adulticide.
That's what it's called. I'm assuming
is
they
that
mean
the effect
mosquitoes
that it's going to have on adults.
That's what I'm saying. Much less that that they're going to spray pesticides in Brooklyn and Queens between the hours of 8:30 p.m. and 6 a.m. So while you're sleeping, the following morning, weather permitting, or in case and the following morning. In case of bad weather, by the way, they're going to do it on Tuesday and Wednesday. So I don't know how we're going to know unless we stay up and look for a truck going by. The trucks in Brooklyn are spraying low concentrations, as they say, of Anvil 10 and 10 and Delta Guard A insecticide. These are not good, as we know. And often the effects of these are downplayed.
That's the only thing I can think is to close your window, and if you have an air conditioner, put it on internal. So it just
that's what
keeps,
it says.
It keeps drawing the air in from already in the house.
From already in the house. Close your windows. Yeah. It says, you know, take a bath. Take a bath to wash. Okay, so these are the neighborhoods that this is happening. In Brooklyn, it's going to be parts of Gravesend, Holmcrest, and Sheepshead Bay. The zip codes are 11214. 11223, 11229, and 11235. In Queens, the areas are, it's hard to read. Boy, they certainly don't make this easy to follow. Cambria Heights, Laurelton, Rosedale, St. Albans, and parts of, I think it says Brookville here. The zips are 11411, 11412, 11413. 11422, 11429, and 11434. That's spraying of mosquito stuff. So tell your friends and neighbors, do not go outside and play from 8:30 p.m. Thursday. And maybe stay out of those parks this weekend until rain can come and, you know, wash it into our drinking water. I thought it was really important that we talk about this. And it's not funny, but that's where we're at right now. It's totally crazy. Ay, 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 ay. Anyway, there's all of that. Plus, down in D.C., I thought it was important to talk about this morning. There is a rally on the 56th anniversary of the March on Washington to oppose the opening of another detention center for migrant children. The organizers say that on this historic day, we believe that none of us are free until all of us are free, and putting migrant children behind bars violates basic human dignity. U.S. immigration policy is and has been characterized by criminalization, scapegoating, and the targeting of people of color. The United States has the dishonorable distinction of being the leading incarcerator in the world. Prisons, as we know here on WBAI, have become the American's norm and are now the default approach to immigration as well as criminal, quote-unquote, justice. On the 56th anniversary of the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, this group is gathering to say that they can do better. Dynamic Service Solutions, which is a for-profit Maryland-based contractor, got $20.5 million contract from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services to operate this facility. And Douglas Jamal will help make it happen by leasing one of its buildings. Dynamic Service Solutions is also involved in the operation of the largest immigrant child detention center in Homestead, Florida. We, as a community, are sickened that the detention of minors is becoming a billion-dollar industry where ICE and police collude to incarcerate our neighbors and the line the pockets of people like this Doug Jamal. He is making the list of people who are hated, along with our Larry Fink character from yesterday. Now, it's interesting that this rally is happening in D.C. because I believe it's Tacoma where they are thinking of putting this in Jay Inslee's state. And he, has dropped out of the race. But he has been very outspoken about not, about the immigration situation and not jailing these children. It's rough out there. You're listening to Waking Up. I'm Juliana Forlano in the studio with King Downing. Okay. Also, by the way, the Trump administration is right now, as we speak, taking millions from FEMA to fund ICE courts and immigration jails. Those jails we just spoke about right now as hurricane season ramps up. Not good. Not good at all.
Coincidence? I think not.
Anyway, we're going to our musical break and we'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Waking Up. Stay tuned.
Say it loud and there's music playing. Say it soft and it's almost like praying. It's almost like praying. It's almost like
mi viejo San Juan,
Isabela, Maricao, Fajardo, Dorado,
Hormiguero, Sumacao, Trujillo, Atillo,
Vega Alta, Vega Baja, Toa Alta, Toa Baja, Mayagüez,
yes,
otra vez,
yes,
Aguadilla, Quebradilla, Guayanilla, Juanadilla, Sicayé, hey,
it's almost like crazy.
That is Lin-Manuel Miranda. The song is Almost Like Praying. It features artists from Puerto Rico. And when this song originally came out, all the money went to help around Hurricanes Maria. And the song is called, well, what do you say? Almost Like Praying. They're praying again now in Puerto Rico to have not a direct hit. Joining us today, well, there's so much to discuss, and I'm glad that Alexander is with us on the regular here, but Tropical Storm Dorian is headed toward Puerto Rico. It's expected to turn into a hurricane, but a storm is enough to cause damage where damage already exists. Our climate reporter and regular guest Alexander Kaufman is in Puerto Rico, and he notes that by yesterday afternoon, grocery store aisles in San Juan had been largely depleted of water and other supplies. People are anticipating this storm. And yet, all Donald Trump can talk about is how much money Congress approved in aid for the island in inflated numbers that are not real. They are lies. Lies, lies, lies. Let's call it what it is. And also, they don't reflect the chronic need Puerto Rico has for combating this, you know, oncoming storms. Alexander's here to talk with us on the phone from Puerto Rico. Alexander, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, good morning.
Can you talk about what it is like there this morning?
Sure. It's still quite calm, a little overcast. There were some gusts of wind coming in last night, and restaurants were closing up and battening down the hatches. There were people shopping to stock up on canned goods and bottled water. And, there's just this general sense of tension as the storm comes closer. It was supposed to only really hit the southwestern part of the island today. Mm. That was the forecast last night. Overnight, that has changed. It looks like it's going to hit the San Juan metro area directly and actually really make its way from the east coast across the north coast of the island. So there are a lot of people who weren't necessarily prepared for that based on the forecast as they were yesterday. So I imagine today is going to be a few hours of preparation and then a lot of holding out for whatever happens.
On the ground, people are still not recovered from the last two hurricanes that came over.
That's true. In many of the poorest parts of the island, you know, there are tens of thousands of people. I believe the number is close to 30,000 people that are still living with blue tarps over their homes because their roofs haven't been replaced since Maria, and you know, they are still struggling to
sure.
keep that out.
And what are those folks doing? Is the government providing a safe shelter for them? Is it like here where you go to the gym or the library and hope that roof doesn't collapse on you?
There are shelters, but a lot of these people are really hoping that, you know, this is only going to be a Category 1 storm if it reaches that level as it's over Puerto Rico. It is a it is a tropical storm right now, and there are conflicting forecasts about whether it will gain strength and become a Category 1 storm over the island or whether it will reach that level as it makes its way northwestward across the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
So it is, as of now, unclear how bad it will be, but there will be strong winds.
Isn't it
flooding
beyond Puerto Rico? Isn't the storm headed directly for Mar-a-Lago? on a positive side, in a positive news.
You know, I've been too concerned with checking
sure.
the trajectory
right.
Here.
I think it said earlier that it was going to Florida. It didn't say exactly where, but the storm looked like it covered the Miami area. Now, the thing that I really wanted to point out is that Trump said on Twitter, his tweet. I mean, I hate the fact that we have to talk about what our president does as a tweet.
I know,
on
but he's the president.
Ugh, vomity. He said, wow, yet another big storm heading to Puerto Rico. This is a quote. Will it ever end? Congress approved $92 billion for Puerto Rico last year, an all-time record for its kind for, quote, anywhere. Could you talk about the nature of this tweet?
Yeah, that's wrong. I mean, he's been throwing around that wildly inflated number for quite some time now. It's simply not correct. It also belies the difficult way in which that money gets distributed. You know, even if there had been anything close to that, only a very small fraction of that money has been distributed on the island itself. You know, there's a lot of bureaucracy to go through. And moreover, you know, there are some specific rules on the island itself in the local government that have made it difficult for a lot of funding to actually reach poor folks here. So for example, you know, there were about $18 billion of grants that were approved to go through the Housing and Urban Development Administration, through the Housing Department here, and then ultimately make their way down to people whose homes had been destroyed. But there is a local prohibition here against using any of that funding to rebuild homes that had been in floodplains. Now, that is, you know, a climate mitigation thing, but that also somewhat disregards some efforts that could be made to mitigate flooding. It disregards efforts that could be made to adapt, and it certainly isn't stopping that money from going to help a lot of the very wealthy American luxury developers who are building, you know, homes and condos and resort villas right on the coast.
Oh, of course. It's the same old real estate development shimmy that they're doing, that they've done everywhere that we expected to see. Every time there's a storm, it's like the real estate developers are like,
that's
oh,
right.
good, we can develop on this stuff now. Where should we put stuff?
I mean, it's the phenomenon that the writer Naomi Klein identifies as shock doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the wake of a disaster like this, you know, you have a lot of these kind of vulture-like investors who see it as a great opportunity to develop places that, you know, where people lived.
And, yeah, and, right.
And people called their home.
I do want to say that I think it's rude to vultures. They're worse than vultures. Vultures are like doing a service.
They're,
right. You know, this is
right.
Terrible.
Yeah, they play a role.
I do want to hit those numbers again. So Trump is saying that Congress approved $92 billion for Puerto Rico. Congress has only allocated $42.7 billion in disaster relief from Puerto Rico. I'm taking this right from your piece. Trump again inflates Puerto Rico's disaster aid as another storm nears. And the island has received less than $14 billion. That tweet is so gross because he didn't say, will they ever end? Like, will those storms ever end? He said, will it ever end? To me, that suggests that he is thinking about the money that needs to go to Puerto Rico, an American territory for Americans. I doubt he would. I mean, is he going to say that if we get hit on Long Island again? Or is that just brown people think there are brown people on Long Island, but you know, Puerto Rico's Puerto Rico. So do you get the sense that the people there on the ground understand that Donald Trump is, just doesn't care about them?
Yes, very, very much so. I was speaking to somebody yesterday who told me that, you know, so there's a legend among the indigenous tribe that lived here when the Spanish first colonized it, 500 years ago, the Tainu people. And there was a legend that, they had believed that the Spaniards were gods and that, one night a group of these Tainu men waited around while a Spaniard went to a watering hole. They cornered him alone. They jumped him and they killed him. And when killing him, they realized, wow, these people aren't immortal beings. They're just human beings just like us. And they are fallible and they can be defeated. And that was that was an earthquake for them socially in these early years of colonization. Now, fast forward to 2017. Somebody was telling me yesterday that Hurricane Maria was the death of the American God. It was the moment when they realized that while they may have American passports, they are by no means going to be protected in the way that American citizens in any state or anywhere else would be protected. That just because the most powerful and wealthy government in the world, was the one that flew its flag over their land, that it, you know, they could not depend on that government to come and clear the roads, to provide water, to provide food, to provide.
Well, maybe they have to put a Trump tower on there. If they put a Trump tower down there, then he would protect his own interests. Perhaps they have to put a little mud flatland for a Trump tower.
So, Alex, talk about earthquakes. A while back, we saw the governor step down, and I take a look at the Constitution. And it's just this line of succession where it moves down, I think, to the Secretary of State and then down and down and down. So where did that end up now, and how does that affect who's going to get to say how this money gets spent?
Yeah, so that, without going too much into the really house of cards like succession that led to three different governors in a week.
Yeah.
The governor now is the former attorney general, a woman named Wanda Vasquez. Mm. She is of the same party as the former governor, Ricardo Rosselló. It's the PNP, which is to put it in context, it's kind of like the conservative Democrats. You know, they probably have a lot. I heard somebody describe them as being sort of similar to Senator Joe Manchin, if that helps
of West Virginia.
Contextualize their,
sure.
Yeah, if that helps to contextualize their politics. So, she gave an interview, her first big television interview in the U.S. to Telemundo about a week or two ago. And when asked, what party do you identify with on the mainland, she said she's a Republican. Mm-hmm. So I think that illustrates for you both, A, some degree of a desire to work differently with the Trump administration than her predecessors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Rosselló liked to tout the fact that he was a Democrat. He obviously saw that there was a political favor to be gained from differentiating himself very explicitly from the president. But it looks like Wanda Vasquez might be a little bit different on that front. So it's unclear right now how that's going to work out, but that's sort of the perspective she's coming from.
What about the second part of the money? Is the junta still going to control what happens to the cash?
Yeah. I mean, the junta still controls everything.
Okay.
It is the overarching, power here that at the end of the day will always have, veto power over any government spending that comes from the government here, at least is the way that the PROMESA law is written.
Okay.
Which Obama signed, not to heap too much criticism on our Republican president right now, because that was a creation of our Democratic predecessor.
We're speaking with Alexander Kaufman, climate reporter at HuffPost, live from Puerto Rico. Where are you going to weather the storm today?
Shortly after we get off the phone, I'm going to go out to the eastern part of the island to see how people are preparing. And then I will probably come back to San Juan because I was not expecting for it to hit here, and I don't think many people were. And, obviously, this is where like a third of the population of the island lives.
Alexander, would you mind? I'm putting you on the spot right now on the air, but would you mind, can we reach out to you for reports on what's happening there?
Assuming that I have service,
and
there is no major disruptions to the phone lines. Yes, I encourage your producer to text me first just to make sure I'm in an area where I can I can be useful.
We'll do that.
But yeah, I'm happy to.
Great. We will try to get you maybe in the next two mornings until Saturday. So if you're going to have a disaster, please do it between now and Saturday so we can cover. I'm just kidding, of course. Thank you, Alexander, for being on the program with us, and we will reach out to you, and good luck to you there, and thanks for the work that you're doing down there. Alexander has also written, you can look in the HuffPost, this article, a liberal sweatshop is quashing its workers' efforts to unionize. That is a great article that I really would like to talk with you about. Unfortunately, we're out of time at this moment, so I encourage people to go out and take a read of that. It's, underpaid and overworked canvassers at the Fund for the Public Interest, which is one of the environmental movement's top fundraising groups, are accusing management there of busting their attempt to unionize after the group shut down a North Carolina office where a worker announced they had organized. We're seeing this all over the place. I'm so glad this is happening because I have met many of our elected leaders, even the ones we really like, and they're not very nice people personally, or they're also kind of grossy personally. But to me, just seeing that this stuff is happening in groups where you wouldn't expect it, I think that's really important to talk about. And maybe, we got to get you back on here.
Well, you know how to reach me.
So much to discuss. Hey, thanks, Alexander. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right.
Take care.
Good luck out there. You're listening to Waking Up. I'm Juliana Forlano in the studio with
King Downing. Good morning.
We'll be right back.
Regrets collect like old friends. Here to relive your darkest moments. I can see no way. I can see no way. And all of the ghouls come out to play. And every demon wants his pound of flesh. But I'd like to keep some things to myself. I'd like to keep my issues strong. It's always darkest before the dawn. And I've been a fool and I've been blind. I can never leave the past behind. I can see no way, I can see no way.
That was the beautiful Florence and the Machine. Shake It Off is the song. You're listening to Waking Up on 99.5 FM WBAI here in New York City. It's in the 60s going up to the mid-70s. Looks like it's going to rain today. But the weekend should be nice. Again, who knows? We're not having a hurricane. I'm grateful. Lyme disease, by the way, we talked about this. We talked about Lyme disease on our show, and we got a lot of feedback. So I thought I would get you an expert. It seems important. So Lyme disease, as we know, is currently on the rise, and it's super difficult to diagnose. And there are a number of people, you know, who have it and who don't know that they have it. What's more, we might not know all there is to know about the history of the disease and its spread. Last month, U.S. Representative Chris Smith of New Jersey introduced an amendment which directs the Inspector General of the Department of Defense to investigate whether or not the DOD infected ticks with Lyme disease on purpose in a biowarfare experiment. And that was off of Plum Island, and they let those ticks outside. And, you know, birds can fly to an island and then leave. An island isn't necessarily, you know, deer can swim. An island isn't. Ugh. To talk about Lyme disease and what we should do when we see its signs for our own health, we have Dr. Raphael Kelman on the show. Dr. Kelman, thanks for joining us on the program.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
It's nice to have you here because you've pioneered a groundbreaking new brand of medicine and healing, and you're integrating holistic and functional medicine with your understanding of the, you know, the world of nature, the root of who we are, the connection to health and healing. So I really appreciate you being here today.
Oh, my pleasure.
So what are the signs and symptoms of Lyme disease? How do you know if you have it?
Sure. You know what it is about Lyme disease? It can masquerade as so many symptoms, and they could come and go. Fatigue is one, headache is another, tingling and numbness in the hands and feet, and that could, you know, change location at any time.
Oh, my God, I feel like we're looking on Google. I got that. I have that.
Yeah. Well, that's the problem. That's the problem. Joint pain, brain fog, it goes on, and they could come and go. You know, you could have also sweating, night sweats. Mm. That's sometimes with co-infections. There's also co-infections that come along with Lyme. It's a very, very complex and complicated subject, unfortunately.
The Infectious Disease Society of America has declined, my understanding is, to recognize that chronic Lyme disease in their, you know, in their clinical practice guidelines. Where are you, on the train? I hear the train behind you.
There's someone made a lot of noise, a car outside the building.
Oh, that's New York City for you. Well, we appreciate you being here, regardless of where you have to be to do it. Anyway, it's, you know, the fact that the Infectious Disease Society of America has declined to recognize chronic Lyme disease in those clinical practice guidelines leaves people who are suffering to go find a Lyme-friendly doctor, which is not easy. Can you talk about why it's hard to find a Lyme-friendly doctor, why this disease is shrouded in secrecy, why they don't want to give you the doxycycline the minute you get there with the bullseye rash, which is one of the...
You know, right. Well, they're more easily diagnosing it when it's acute.
Meaning you just got it and you have that rash.
Yeah. You know, then it's simple. Someone comes in with a bullseye rash, or they were out of state or Long Island somewhere, and then they get a bullseye rash, then everyone would get, most doctors, of course, would diagnose that as Lyme. But it becomes much more complicated when there is no rash and it's not acute and the symptoms are more elusive. Then, unfortunately, very few doctors would diagnose it or know anything about it. And it's unfortunate that, you know, the CDC or whoever it is that's making medical policy or that's spreading medical policy, doesn't recognize the concept of chronic Lyme disease, that it's not necessarily acute, and you could have Lyme disease, or if you don't have a bullseye rash, or you never had a bullseye rash, and you could still have it.
I want to encourage people, if you actually get the bullseye rash and you can't get the doctor for 2 days or whatever, take a photo of the bullseye rash, because then you can say, here's the rash, and then you have a photo of it. Because if it's not there, I've heard people time after time go to the doctor, say, I had the rash, and then the doctor, oh, you don't have it now, you know, that kind of thing, which is a whole nother show, why doctors don't actually listen to the patients. If you have one that listens, that's very important, and you've got to hold on to that person. But can you talk about, you know, why is it so often misdiagnosed?
Well, again, the problem is the numerous symptoms and that one could have, and also they could be very vague, and sometimes they're so difficult to describe. They could sometimes feel, oh, I have a, it's not really a headache, it's like pain in my brain, or I can't think straight, or it's like electrical shock, and all kinds of, you know, vague descriptions that are not typical, and the doctor thinks these people are crazy. And in fact, they, of course, they're not.
I wish doctors would stop that. They would just take you at your word and say, let me see what
they're
I can do.
They're usually assuming that there's something wrong with the patient. I mean, they're crazy, you know, or that I never heard of such symptoms, then it can't be a medical problem.
Especially if it's a woman. Sure. If you go in there as a woman and you're like, it's tingling on my right side, they're like, you're crazy. You must have hysteria. Yeah. No, I don't.
Exactly. Mm. Or I can't think straight, or then it changes location, or it's head pain, not a headache, whatever it is. Joint pain, first it's in my right knee, then in my left knee, and it's all over the place, and then I have this problem, that problem. They tend not to believe it. And then all the routine blood tests come out normal. Oh, no, you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you fine? Because the limited blood tests that we know about look normal. Therefore, you are fine. And that's, you know,
I've had
the
that
height
happen.
Of hubris for me. It's very unfortunate. You really have to listen to the patient. And it's their patient's symptoms that's primary, the blood test is secondary. And that's something that, you know, we really need to get to really understand that it's first the patient's symptoms.
Dr. Kelman, what are the treatment methods that you use for Lyme disease?
Well, you know, there's one approach where you use antibiotics. But the problem is when doctors use antibiotics, they tend not to use either the right one.
The right
or
one.
They don't.
Yeah.
Or they don't hit it. They don't hit it hard enough. You know, sometimes you need three antibiotics, or you need to rotate them. But also, especially when it's chronic, you have to think of other approaches. Sometimes with antibiotics, sometimes alone. There are many natural approaches. There's a lot of different herbs. I have my own particular cocktail that works very, very well. We also do sometimes intravenous high dose vitamin C therapy, which also has an effective outcome. We use other types of IVs like ozone and hydrogen peroxide. And these are, and sometimes even laser IV, believe it or not.
Wow.
These are very new treatments that work, but they're not yet understood by the conventional medical world. But remember, you know, these things definitely have clinical efficacy. We use them, you know, all the time. And also, remember, the integrative approach works best. And unfortunately, it's not yet completely accepted as the way to go. Remember, just throwing antibiotics at people has, you know, negative effects as well. This is why people could be on antibiotics for treatment, and sometimes that makes sense. But then they relapse, and now they have something called chronic Lyme disease. Well, you know, that's frequently because they weren't treated properly or didn't work.
We're speaking with Dr. Kelman. He is a visionary in understanding, you know, new and groundbreaking medicine that can, you know, treat Lyme disease, which is a huge, huge thing. Dr. Kelman, what do you make of the fact that, as I reported at the top, that this disease might actually have been, maybe you don't think too much about this because you're busy with the treatment, but, you know, according to the book, The Secret History of Lyme Disease and Biological Weapons by Chris Newby, which documents how the U.S. military actually infected ticks with a complex, hard-to-detect pathogen in the 60s, and the book's linchpin is an interview with a late scientist, Willy Bergdorfer, who did the infecting himself, and references an accidental release of the ticks that might have ignited all this. What do you make of the history of that? What do you make of the fact that there are folks representatives in New Jersey who want to look into it?
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised if that's true. There's a lot of bad things that, you know, that were done, that whether they were accidental or perhaps even intentional. That, but, you know, there's no way to know that at this point in the game. And right now we have to really focus on treating it and really treating it properly. And it can be done, and it can be treated properly.
Even later.
Oh, yeah. There is such an entity as chronic Lyme disease. Mm. And chronic Lyme disease could be treated. It could be identified. It has to be understood, not so much that it's just the Lyme anymore, but it's also the immune response that has gone at it. But the immune system doesn't know how to handle it. And perhaps it's because it was done intentionally, that it didn't evolve. When there's a natural infectious diseases, there's an ecology that protects, that eventually adapts. Now, it could certainly make sense from a biological perspective why it's been so difficult to treat, and that's because it didn't evolve naturally. Mm. But this is, really not my focus right now. My focus is to really helping people who are suffering from this problem, and the information I'm trying to get out is that they can be helped. It has to be recognized as a problem. Mm. It has to be understood that it could be treated properly. And antibiotics is one approach, and it doesn't work for everyone. And when it's a chronic problem, it has to be approached frequently from a multifactorial perspective. And antibiotics may not be the number one approach.
Dr. Kelman, we have a caller on the line. I hope they want to ask you about Lyme disease. So let's take the call, if you don't mind. And then I'm going to ask where people can find you specifically. And then if they can't, or if they're not if they're listening from an area where it wouldn't work, what they can do when they're discussing these issues with their own doctor who may or may not be Lyme friendly. So let's take the caller. Caller, you are on the air. Your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, it's Janine.
Hi, Janine. Yeah, it's Juliana here in the studio. You want to talk about Lyme disease, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay, go ahead.
So last month, I was in Prospect Park doing yoga, not feeling well already, in a very anxiety, depressed mode. I go in and out of that periodically. Anyway,
I hear you.
I don't take medication. So I'm doing a free yoga class. On top of that, so now I leave. And I'm really irritable, and I'm seeing bugs all over the place. And I think it was a morning that I heard about Lyme disease already from WBAI. Anyways, so I'm scratching all night. By the end of the night, I look in the mirror. My neck, I have a huge rash, but, from scratching. I go to bed. The next morning, I walk myself to dermatology here on Atlantic Avenue. I live on Smith Street.
Oh, we're neighbors.
And immediately, she looks at me, don't even touch me, shingles. Shingles. Okay. So she gives me the protocol.
Did you tell her you were
shingles.
You're like, I was in the park.
Yes, I told her that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, make a long story. So now I go and I go through the protocol for shingles.
Ugh.
And 2 days later, though, I start seeing it on my face, my breast a little. I'm going, wait a minute. So I go for a second opinion in a walk-in clinic on here on Court Street, and she says, well, that's what it looks like. She goes, I probably would have did the same protocol. I said, why don't you do a test? So she did a skin culture, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
P.S., I find out that Sunday it's not shingles, but I already finished the medicine. It's already going away. Now I had my therapist do a blood work on me.
Janine, what? We got to get to
Lyme disease.
Okay, and did you? That's good.
That came back.
Wait, your
negative.
Therapist is doing Lyme disease tests?
My therapist.
Wow.
Blood work. Yes, I go to Mind Body.
No, I think
Mind
that's so
one.
That's so interesting
very
that
intense,
you have to get
very
from
intensive.
Your. You have to get.
Oh, yeah, because the MD does crap.
Okay, hold on. So, Janine,
positive for Lyme disease?
Were you positive
I
for Lyme
told,
disease?
I was told, oh, there's no Lyme in Prospect Park.
Yes,
said,
there
you
is.
You got it in Staten Island. What makes you think they don't cross the bridge? Are you kidding me?
Janine, hold on. Let's get a response from the doctor. Dr. Kelman,
yes.
There's Lyme disease in Prospect Park. I knew that already.
Yeah, and it could go, all over. It could be all over the place. But were the last test positive for Lyme disease?
Janine, was the last test?
The test just case you said negative. I was told that.
Well, look, it really depends on your symptoms. I make it's a clinical diagnosis. If one has the symptoms of Lyme disease, it's like a smell test. You could almost tell if someone has Lyme disease by the language they use, by the way they're describing their problems. Sometimes you have to look much, much deeper in terms of the types of testing you're doing, like in markers of inflammation from the immune system. But ultimately, you can't rely on the blood test. It could be negative, and you could still have Lyme disease. It really goes by your symptoms.
So what would you suggest?
That has to be in the system.
What would you suggest Janine do in this case when she has to go to doctor?
Well, if your problems persist, go to a Lyme literate doctor who knows something about Lyme. Where do you live?
She lives in Brooklyn. Well,
my office is in Manhattan, but there are many doctors nowadays.
There's a bridge between Brooklyn and Manhattan. She could take the bridge.
Right, exactly.
When you go, is there a place online where people who are having symptoms and wondering if this is their problem can go? And also, where can they go to find you specifically? Because we're kind of out of time.
That makes it more confusing when you just look online. Well, look, my website is kellmancenter.com.
K-E-L-L-M-A-N.
M-A-N. My office number is 212-717-1118, 717-1118. I know how people are suffering out there from Lyme. I treat so many patients with Lyme, and they get better. You don't have to suffer with these vague, unexplained symptoms, and you go from doctor to doctor, and they say everything's fine, your labs are normal, you don't have Lyme.
Dr. Kelman, I'm sorry, but we're at the very end of our thing here. We have the question, and Janine, I really hope you feel better, and I hope you get the treatment that you need. You can try the Kelman Center. Right. The phone number is 717-1118, and that's in the 212. But the question I have here is, we have listeners not anywhere near Manhattan. What do they do when they're going to see their doc?
Okay, remember that. Trust your symptoms. Just because a doctor is telling you don't have Lyme because all your tests are normal, don't necessarily believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Try to find a doctor who is Lyme literate. There are a lot of different herbs that can work, to improve your immune system or to help the body fight Lyme. Remember also that when you improve, I wrote a book on the microbiome. When you heal your microbiome,
right.
You could do these things on your own.
I was just going to say
when you heal your microbiome, a lot of your vague symptoms could get better no matter what the diagnosis is.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely get a hold of my book. I wrote a book on the whole brain or the microbiome breakthrough. Believe it or not, the path of healing bacteria is the best path to heal a wide variety of symptoms.
Yeah, Dr. Kelman, that is a whole... I'm going to want you to come back and talk specifically about the microbiome. I have my own questions and thoughts and experiences with the microbiome, from how they are treating children who have had adverse reactions to vaccines to what they are doing in hospitals when when you are having a C-section. They try to get the microbiome out of the woman's vagina and smear it all over the baby. There's like a whole thing going on here.
That's right.
And I'm sure this, King's like, you're looking awkward.
Checking the list.
I can say vagina.
Of course you can.
What else am I going to say? Down there, parts, like I talked to my daughter. Dr. Kelman, thank you so much for being on the show. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yes, I hope you'll come back and join us again. 212 is this is Dr. Kelman. The Kelman Center is in Manhattan. We're not doing a commercial for that. I just wanted to make sure that you had the info that you needed. And for me, it's wonderful to have a doctor on telling you that, hey, you're just because your doctor says that you don't have it doesn't mean you don't have it. And just because he says that you do have it doesn't mean that you do have it. It's a little confusing out there these days. You really need to be your own advocate or bring an advocate with you when you're going to the doctor.
Yeah, and the thing I'm thinking is we're going to look into this investigation, so thanks for bringing that up, because if they created a new form of this that's causing these symptoms to just persist in a way that they hadn't in the past, then we need to know that, because it means the government might have the antidote.
We're fist bumping. That was a good idea.
Yeah.
You're thinking outside the box.
Outside the biome.
Oh, this is the best. Okay, well, Jarrett Murphy is joining us now to talk about what is happening on Max and Murphy, our 5 p.m. show preview. Jarrett, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
What's going on tonight?
Well, we're going to be focused on policing on Max and Murphy tonight at 5 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have on John Darsh, who is the executive director of the Citizen Complaint Review Board, and also John Jay, professor and veteran NYPD cop. Eugene O'Donnell will be talking about the Pantaleo decision, the DC Adonis decision, what that says about policing and police regulation in New York, and other issues swirling around that, the mayor, police suicides, the whole situation has developed in the past couple weeks. So should be interesting talk, and obviously listener calls are very, very welcome. We want it to be a big open discussion of all that's happened in just the past few weeks.
Are you kidding? That's going to be a great show.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so. My part would be great. Ben's not that good.
No,
but
I'm really great. But
so,
it's good that you can hold him up like that.
Exactly.
You're doing him a service.
Water. You know so well. Thank you
for acknowledging
what I go through.
We're speaking with Jarrett Murphy of Max and Murphy. The show is on here on WBAI at 5 p.m., or you can find it on our archives. If you're not available at 5, go to WBAI.org, and you'll find it there. Hey, thanks, everybody, for listening. What a great show that was. I'm sorry I couldn't take more calls, and I hope Janine and anyone who is listening feels better. That the doctor was Dr. Raphael Kelman, K-E-L-L-M-E-N, at the Kelman Center. His phone number is 212-717-1118. Oh, by the way, you want to call for the No Spray Coalition to make sure that they stop spraying and turn back and follow this City Law 37. The phone number to do that, 347-396-4177. So much going on here in New York City. We hope we can bring you information to help keep you safe and healthy and in the know and light, right? You don't want to drag through your day, even when there's so much going on. Stay safe, stay dry. See you tomorrow.
The technical and creative team that has brought to these airwaves many of the most profound radio dramas to ever be transmitted will come together once again to present on Saturday, November 16th, 2019, something you have never witnessed before. Prepare yourself.
Hi, this is DJ Baby K from The Sweet Spot. On the go, but want to support the station dedicated to you, the listener? No problem. Simply dial 41444 and text transmit 995 to make a pledge by text. Support WBAI's unique voice and keep us on the air during this critical time. Once again, dial 41444 and text transmit 995 to make your pledge. Thanks for supporting listener sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM.
Hi, this is David Amram. You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 on your FM dial, and keep on listening.